Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, U-N-I-F-Y-D, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
From the hills of Strawberry Canyon, I'm Coin Dang, and this is the Golden Bear Cast. Let's go. Go Bears.
And welcome back to another episode of the California Golden Bear Cast, a part of the Blue Wire Podcast Network. I'm Rob Wong. Andy, of course, is still in Mexico, has not returned yet. So it's just me today, and with me to talk about the Thanksgiving weekend Cal football game down at the Rose Bowl is Carlos from the No Truck Stops podcast. We're going to talk about UCLA. Carlos, how you doing this day before Thanksgiving? Thanksgiving Eve.
Yeah, Thanksgiving Eve. I'm doing all right. I was at the UCLA Gonzaga basketball game yesterday. I was very excited for it. Came to Vegas for it. One of the reasons I came to Vegas, and got blown out. So that was very cool. Very exciting stuff. But other than that, you know, doing well. If the worst thing going on in my life is a 2-hour basketball game where my team didn't look good, I guess I can't complain too much. Unfortunately, I have to watch the football team on Saturday. So,
well, first world problems, right? let's get right into it. The first thing I want to ask off the bat is give me your eval, your recap of the UCLA season so far, where they started, the expectations, whatever you want to talk about the UCLA football program, the floor is yours.
Yeah, so I think talking about the UCLA season and its expectations has to be situated within like the Chip Kelly era and the trajectory. This is year 4 of Chip Kelly, and this was sort of the year that UCLA was intended to be building for, the year that UCLA was going to pop. Chip Kelly had some absolutely brutal seasons. His first two seasons, he went 3-9, 4-8. Last season, dead season, COVID year, UCLA improved pretty significantly, finished 3-4. But now one of the things that kind of keeps going around and is getting reported for good reasons or getting made visible is now that UCLA is guaranteed to finish at best 8-4, Chip Kelly will have the worst 4-year stretch of any UCLA football coach in history. He will be the worst UCLA football coach by win percentage in history. So I think UCLA had to go 9-3 to avoid that distinction for Chip Kelly. This season, if you looked at it in a vacuum and didn't situate it within that that context, I think you'd say they had a good season. They're 7-4 right now. They have beaten teams that they should, and they have lost to the good teams. There have been no baffling losses. There have been no losses where you sort of look at that and say, how did they lose to that team? They lost to a decent Fresno State team. They lost to what was then a very good Arizona State team, is now just okay, but they're just okay. They also aren't losing horrific games to teams that are much, much worse than them. And their third loss was to, they lost to Fresno State, Arizona State, And I don't have the schedule up in front of me. Utah got blown out by Utah, a pretty comfortable loss. And again, Utah is a good team. And right before that was the loss to Oregon, a game that I think was much more comfortable for Oregon than I think the final score and sort of the final sequences indicate. Like, I think that Oregon pretty much dominated that game. UCLA made a late rally and, you know, had a chance at the end, but really were lucky to be in it. So four decent teams, none of those, I think there's any real shame in losing to them in outside of a vacuum. But just considering what UCLA had, UCLA was top 10 in the country in returning production, extremely experienced team, a team that we were told by Chip Kelly over and over again would be the one that would pop off, right? I think he has this saying that gets memed now among UCLA fans, which is, you know, if you plant bamboo and you water it for the first year, nothing happens. And if you water it for the second year, nothing happens. And if you water it for a third year, still nothing happens. Or if you continue to water it and on the fourth, and you continue to water it until the fourth year, it grows dramatically and it doesn't stop growing. I guess this is the bamboo year, and it's just sort of ended in an 8-4. It's an 8-4, 7-5 season, right? Depending on the game with Cal. So, it's been more watchable and a more fun UCLA team than what we've had to suffer with from 2018 to 2020. It's not. I think it fell short of expectations. I think it fell way short of what we expected from Chip Kelly. I think it fell way short of what we expected of the roster. So, yeah, I guess that's my evaluation of the season. Obviously, I think UCLA fans are buzzing right now, just because UCLA did beat the absolute snot out of USC. Hanging 62 on your rival is never anything that people sneer at. And the takes around Chip Kelly kind of got muted for a bit, not because I think people were supportive, but just because it's USC. You want to beat your rival. You know what it was like to beat the absolute piss out of your rival. You did it just this past weekend. So it does quiet some of that, but I don't think that means his seat is comfortable or anything. So that's what I'd say about the season. Good team, fun team, not what was expected. Certainly not worth the 3 years that came before it.
Well, I mean, the follow-up I got to ask is, you know, you talked about Chip Kelly, and the whole thing about Chip Kelly going into this season was a make or break year for him, right? Like, as you said, the last 3 years weren't necessarily that great, and all the hot seat, you know, columns and whatever, whatnot come out, and Chip Kelly's usually at the top of the list, at least from the West Coast, you know, those articles. And then tell me if I'm wrong here, but I read something this week saying that Chip Kelly's buyout actually drops to zero after some date early next year. So does an 8-4 season save him from that? Or is the possibility of paying zero for a buyout, is that too enticing to give up considering the last 3 years as well?
Yeah, so I think the buyout dropping to zero in January 2022, I believe it's like January 15th, 2022. Yeah. That buyout dropping to zero, really what that does, I think, is put Chip Kelly's fate solely in the athletic director's hands. Martin Jarman, who started, I think, July 2020, actually, July 2019, I can't remember, one of those two. It puts it squarely in his hands. He doesn't have to rally donors and get rich boosters to say, hey, this isn't working. We're going to need to foot the bill for a buyout and foot the bill for a new coach. He doesn't need to sort of rally the troops and kind of make a convincing case to fire Chip Kelly. I think that he has much more agency over that decision, I think, than a lot of places do when they're ready to fire a coach. Mm-hmm. So that's how that factors in. I think an 8-4 season doesn't guarantee him, you know, they could, I've seen a couple of scenarios. If UCLA goes 8-4, one of the scenarios that I've seen out there, reported from some UCLA folks, is that Chip Kelly and UCLA could just decide to mutually part ways. I think I saw this on Bruin Report Online. That was a conjecture that was thrown out there. They could decide to mutually part ways. Chip Kelly could say, I don't really like being here in LA. I kind of want to go be an offensive coordinator in the NFL or some other college or whatever. And UCLA could say, it wasn't working out any well, so let's just mutually part ways. Let's just go our separate ways here. Alternatively, Chip Kelly could say, I found another job. I'm going to go take that instead. The other scenario is that UCLA does fire him. I think that's less likely if UCLA goes 8-4 and they say, hey, we're not signing this contract. We're not doing this again. We want to be elite. 8-4 is not what we expected after 4 years of this. But I think what is most likely, just from where I sit and knowing how the UCLA athletics department has operated in the past, historically, I don't think a coach has ever been fired. I'm not sure if this has been I'm sure this has been verified. I looked this up a while ago, and I feel very sure that no coach has been fired after beating USC. Coaches just don't get fired after beating USC. That I think indicates just how much that game means for a lot of people, and especially given the way that UCLA beat USC. So if they finish 8-4, they beat Cal. I would say that he's safe now. Alternatively, if UCLA loses to Cal, and I think this is a very important game for UCLA, I don't think there are no stakes here, particularly for the coaching staff. If UCLA loses to Cal, his seat and becomes engulfed in flames again. And I think that there is a very high chance that he will get fired, particularly with a $0 buyout in January. People are sort of like, well, you know, his buyout's huge before January, but I'm like, someone will be able to foot the bill for it, or they can say you're employed until January, we'll pay you until January, but some other guy's going to be the head coach and waiting. I don't know. And maybe that hurts recording. I have no idea, but I assume they're going to figure out with 2 months left of a buyout, something will get figured out. So, I think that's where the Cal game comes in. I think, we'll talk about this and you have many questions about it. It's a particularly tricky game because the thing with UCLA is they beat the bad teams and they lose to the good ones. And right now, as it sits, I have no clue if Cal is good or bad. I think first half Cal was brutal. That was a bad team. Since the bye week, Cal has looked good. They were competitive against Oregon. They beat the hell out of Oregon State. Their one loss was to Arizona, and they were missing like what, 30 scholarship players? I don't think anyone kind of looks at that and says, yeah, that's a bad loss. And then they went and beat the hell out of Stanford, and Stanford is horrific, but they had Tanner McKee in that game, and Tanner McKee is really their only source of offense. That's not a wholly unimpressive beatdown the way that, I don't know, Utah beat them down or something, where they were rolling out Jack West and all those other kids. So I'm not sure that. So here's my theory. If UCLA beats Cal, Cal is a bad team. And if UCLA loses to Cal, Cal is a good team, because that makes sense with what UCLA has done this year. And we can say that definitively. But yeah, that's what I'd say about Chip Kelly and what this game means, I think, for his tenure.
Well, I mean, that's the perfect transition. And let's head into the game a little bit and focus in on UCLA for the time being. What is there a player on offense that Cal fans should know about when watching this game?
Yeah, if they don't already, I'm sure the Cal fans are very well aware of Dorian Thompson-Robinson. He he's been awesome this year. I'm just going to say it. I know that UCLA fans are frustrated with him. I am sure that fans around the Pac-12 have kind of an idea of who Dorian Thompson-Robinson is based on his prior years. That's not who Dorian is anymore, I think. Some of the absolutely baffling fumbles and mistakes that he was making in 2018, 2019, those are gone. We have seen one of those fumbles where he just kind of like slips out of his hand for no apparent reason. And, we did see a forward pass 10 yards past the line of scrimmage. One of the most baffling things I have ever seen. I can't remember what game that came against. But I got to go post a highlight or something, because that was insane. You know, it's like 10 yards past the line of scrimmage. Who does that? But anyway.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Besides those two moments, I think Dorian Thompson-Robinson has had a good season. I think for about the first two-thirds of the season, his first halves were subpar. I think he can miss throws deep and can't always connect on the deep throws. And in this offense where UCLA is very run-oriented, hitting deep throws is a lot of what he's asked to do when he's passing. But he's outside of that, he's been incredible. I think that he's gotten much better at figuring out when to tuck it and run. He's gotten much better at making the throws he needs to make. Chip Kelly's offense, for as much as I hate that man, Chip Kelly's offense is very good at scheming receivers open, and Dorian yep. Thompson-Robinson hits them. So obviously DTR, a big one. And then I'll throw in... You Cal fans probably know about Zach Charbonnet. He's been all over the place, an incredible running back. I'd say Greg Dulcich is the other one. You know, if I were to pick three guys and sort of the three-headed monster there, Greg Dulcich, their tight end, has been UCLA's leading receiver for a couple of years now. I think has really great hands. Not a great blocker. At one point he was kind of tasked with blocking Kayvon Thibodeau. Not something I would do ever. That's what happened. But Greg Dulcich is an incredible pass catcher, is oftentimes UCLA's option number one when trying to get 20, 30 yards on a throw. So those are the players that I think stick out the most. I mean, they've got a number of other playmakers, Kazmir Allen, who's very fast. Britton Brown, another bruiser, wasn't available for the last game. And then, mix of receivers. The offensive line is mostly good. I'm not sure how many standouts there are. I'm not like an offensive line guru. It's really hard to evaluate. But as a whole, as a unit, they were decent. So anyway, Dorian Thompson-Robinson, Zach Charbonnet, and Greg Dulcich in that order, I think.
All right. Let's switch over to the other side of the ball. Which players on defense should Cal fans know about?
You know, I think as Cal fans might know, and if they don't, UCLA's defense is horrific. It's bad. It's bottom three in the league, I think. It's absolutely brutal. It's hard for me to figure out what this UCLA defense is good at any given time. I think there was a period in time where some people thought that UCLA's run defense was good because statistically it, quote, was. They were leading the league, the Pac-12, in rushing yards allowed per game for quite a while. But I think people who watched these games would tell you that is because UCLA secondary is notoriously horrifically bad. For about 3 years now, 3 years straight, UCLA has been dead last in passing yards allowed, this year being no exception. That secondary has some serious talent deficiencies, and for a while had some schematic problems, but I think schematically it's improved, but only to cover up for the talent, and it's still not particularly good. And in fact, I'd still say it's bad. I think that the player that I think gets the most recognition, and I think deservedly so sometimes, is Mitchell Agudé, the edge rusher along the defensive line. He's a great edge rusher, but I think that I don't think that I would put him in the top tier of edge rushers in the Pac-12. Mika Tafua out of Utah, Kayvon Thibodeau, obviously. Just those guys. I think Mitchell Agudé has some moments and can really get off the edge, but he's not the kind of playmaker that I think some of the other guys are. UCLA fans, I've heard a number of times bring up Carl Jones, but he doesn't get much playing time, so I wouldn't worry about him too much. He should, it sounds like. He's very fast and is really good at ball pursuit, but doesn't really get much time, so not a huge name. Quantrez Knight, I think, the defensive back for UCLA, has moments where he can really affect the outcome of a play. They'll often send him on blitzes and try to get pass rush, you know, kind of send him to blitz and see if they can't disrupt anything in the backfield. And oftentimes he'll make a mess back there. But in general, what UCLA has tried to do this year is get to the quarterback and disrupt things in the backfield. And when they have to play a bad team that does not have a particularly good offensive line, or is not a particularly well-coached offensive line, they'll get home. And if they play a team that's decently well-coached and has some talent along the offensive line, they don't get home. And when UCLA's pass rush is not getting home, when Mitchell Agudé is not getting home, then UCLA's defense falls apart and has zero answers for anything. If they're not getting sacks, and they often don't, they often do not get to the backfield. It's rough sledding. So I think against Cal, I think hard to say, but my hunch is that it's going to be a problem. I don't think Cal's offensive line is bad. I would not describe it as bad. I think Chase Garbers does not have to often, he does sometimes, but does not have to often run for his life. I think the way that, someone like, Tanner McKee, really, last game, Jack West, you know, the Stanford offensive line can be absolutely brutal. Colorado's offensive line up until the point where they fired their offensive line coach was horrific. So, yeah, that's what I'd say about UCLA's defense. If I had to pick a player, it's going to be Mitchell Agudé. But I got to tell you, that's it. For Cal fans who don't know, that's the absolute worst part of this team. And which part of it is the worst depends on what's happening, but it's typically the secondary.
Man, gives me hope, makes me hopeful.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. What do you think? What have you thought? I'm curious what you think of Cal's offensive line and what's that. You know, I've obviously listened a couple of times, but overall in the season, how would you describe Cal's offensive line? And do you feel like, I really like Cal's running backs and I really like their running game. I really like Christopher Brooks. I really like, is it Dancy?
Marcel Dancy.
Yes, Marshall Dancy. Yes, thank you. I really like them. I think they really get, but I don't know. Do you feel like that offensive line is consistent? Does it depend?
I think they've gotten better as the season's progressed. I still wouldn't put them in the upper echelon of the elite of the conference yet. But as you said, bad is not a word I would use to describe them. There's lapses, but I would put them at least the floor would just be just the bang middle of the conference. Just not great, not bad, but enough to win you games.
Right.
But then there's also games where they play out of their minds, right? Like Oregon State against Stanford. Right. There are games where they play out of their minds. So as you said, I don't know which one we'll get when we play UCLA.
And it's all come in the back half of the season. All of those, their best games, I think, have come in the back half of the season. And I think that's encouraging for if you're a Cal fan, not as a UCLA fan. As a Cal fan, I think that's encouraging. Like that offense has balled out. I mean, they had some moments actually in the first half of the season, that offense balling out, but particularly in the second half of the season post bye week, they've looked good. And I think that's trouble for UCLA, because if they're not going to be able to get to Chase Garbers, and Chase Garbers himself is mobile, and he's going to be able to get away and or be able to truck some guys and shed some tackles. If UCLA is not going to be able to get home to him, they're cooked.
I mean, we got a couple more days to do some more predictions and analysis. hopefully someone's right. That's all I ask. that one of us at least knows something about our team that becomes true. It's once again, like I said this about Stanford, like for us, like our last three games are the California circuit, and whenever you play the California schools, like it might not be your biggest rival, but it is a rivalry game to a certain mm-hmm. degree, that all rationale gets thrown out the window. Like something just happens, right? Whether it's, mm-hmm. you know, our guys from LA that are playing down there, or the NorCal guys like playing against us in a UCLA uniform, just everything just gets thrown out. So who knows? Who knows? I didn't think the Stanford game was going to be a blowout, but it ended up being a blowout. So who knows?
Yeah.
Who knows?
Right. You're totally right. And just about that, like I hope if UCLA wins, that'll be great, and we'll get to claim that very dumb Kings of California thing that Stanford fans have been claiming for forever. Didn't even know that was a thing. Stanford fans totally made that up. And if Cal wins, I hope y'all beat USC so you can claim it. So again, Stanford lives in my nightmares, and I just hope that someone gets to claim that made up trophy. That they've constructed in their imaginations.
That dark, dark place. Never need to return. All right. We kind of talked about this briefly, but I do want to get your thoughts on this. In terms of the game, what does UCLA need to do to win this game?
Yeah, I think kind of like we talked about, they've got to get home. I think they've got to get home to Chase Garbers in the pass rush. We can't really trust that secondary to hold for very long, and so it needs to disrupt some things in the backfield. That rush defense, I think if they can get back to Chase Garbers, it would help the rush defense tremendously, but I'm still not entirely confident that Christopher Brooks and Marshall Dancy aren't going to get whatever they want. I think offensively, UCLA needs to... You know, the nice thing about UCLA's offense, it's a good offense. It's a top 10, it's a top 20 offense in the country, I think, per SP Plus. The nice thing is I feel like UCLA's offense can win in a variety of ways. If they do run the ball 50 times as they want to do with Zach Charbonnet and Britton Brown and Keegan Jones a little bit, their third kind of running back doesn't get a ton of touches, but is out there and has had some successes. If that running back trio can get going, that would be extremely helpful. That would obviously go a long way for UCLA's chances at winning this game. But the nice thing is I feel like Dorian Thompson-Robinson has won UCLA games from, you know, using his arm and his legs. I think he's kept UCLA in games just running and being an absolute pain in the ass, running out of the pocket and kind of tucking it and making sure he gets 10, 15 yards. He kept UCLA in the game against, for example, Arizona State, where absolutely nothing going on in the running game. And UCLA was only competitive for as long as it was because Dorian Thompson-Robinson was able to tuck it and run. The nice thing is UCLA can win in a number of ways. Cal's defense has been up and down this year, as I'm sure you know, which is very weird. Typically, what we've seen in Justin Wilcox years, it's a struggling offense and a really good stout defense. But defensively, feels like Cal has fallen off some. Although, again, second half of this year, much, much better. Even in the Arizona game, you know, it's like it was a 0-0 score like in the fourth quarter. So they've had their moments. They've also had some breakdowns. Second half of the season, obviously, Cal's defenses look good. So I'm not sure. I'm really curious to see if how much of that holds up. Can Dorian Thompson-Robinson take advantage of Cal's down secondary? I think that secondary was really, really good prior to this year or prior to 2020. But again, 2020, how much does that count? I don't really know. Prior to 2020, that Cal secondary was very good. And I understand that was probably because of the loss of an assistant coach. But can UCLA scheme receivers open against them and still be able to get chunk yards? So I think there's a variety of paths to winning on offense. It's the defense that I think is going to matter the most, and I think is a bellwether for Cal too. Are Brooks and Dancy going to be able to get the chunk yards that they have? 352 rushing yards against Stanford is absolutely insane. Kind of probably says a little bit more about Stanford's run defense than I think it does about Cal's run game. Especially given that they I think they gave up 400 yards to Utah the week before.
Yep.
I still think those running backs are good. And if UCLA falters in any one of the areas, in the pass rush or in rush defense, they're cooked, and it's going to be a shootout probably. And you might say, well, I don't know if we want to get in a shootout with UCLA. That UCLA offense can get stagnant. It's not invincible. It can get stagnant. It can start doing some really dumb stuff and trotting out three tight ends and getting into some weird formations and doing some tinkering and experimentation. and Cal's defense is good enough to make them pay for it. So it's gonna be the defense. If UCLA's defense is, I don't know, if it looks like it's a top 60 defense, I think UCLA has a good shot of winning. Frequently it's not, though. So that's going to be where the game is won or lost, I think, is how much can Cal take advantage of that secondary? Is Chase Garbers can sling it, but also sometimes he's brutal. If he's on against UCLA, and he very well could be, that secondary is cooked. He's one of the few quarterbacks in the Pac-12, I think, that can take advantage of UCLA's secondary because of what he can do downfield and the throws that he can make downfield. Oftentimes, again, not super consistent this year, but he can do it. So that's what I'd say. It's gonna be on the defense. If any phase of the defense falters, the rest of it's just sort of crumbles. So,
I mean, you already talked about the next question I was going to ask, which was, what does Cal need to do the game? So we're going to skip over that one. We're going to go straight to your prediction of how you think this game is going to go.
I mean, this game is by far the most unpredictable to me so far this season. I think Fresno's, just thinking about UCLA's losses, it's like I saw the Fresno State loss kind of coming, saw the Arizona State loss possibly coming. I thought, if UCLA's good, they'll beat Arizona State. But if they're not that good, they're going to lose. And they lost. Saw the loss to Oregon and Utah coming because they were good teams. I feel like you could predict what UCLA is going to, if you've been watching UCLA, you could pretty reasonably predict what they're going to do week to week. Mm-hmm. Assuming you just sort of go off of what they've done this season. They're very consistent. The issue is I have no idea what Cal team is going to show up. If it's the back half, if truly the back half of this season is an indicator of where this Cal team is, I think Cal's going to be able to get what it wants on the ground offensively. I think Chase Garbers is going to have a big game. I think this might be a big Chase Garbers game, if I'm being honest, more so than I think they're running in, because I think the weakest part of UCLA's defense is that secondary. And I know Chase Garbers can make throws that are needed to kind of make them pay, I think. If UCLA loses, Chase Garbers is going to have a big game. The rushing attack will be good, but I think it'll fall on Chase's shoulders. And I think UCLA's offense will have, you know, a stretch in the middle where they'll come 3-4 straight possessions without a score, or maybe a field goal here and there. If UCLA loses, that's typically how they lose. They'll start hot, kind of in the middle, stagnate, and then pick it up again late. If UCLA wins, and to be clear, I think Cal could absolutely blow out UCLA. That's totally in the cards. Cal could come with a close win, or they could blow out UCLA. I think those are equally likely. And the same is true for this is just how much I have no idea what's going to happen in this game. UCLA could win in a close one, or they could blow out. Oftentimes you go into games and you're like, yeah, you know, I think it's Cal is either going to win close, or UCLA is going to blow them out or win close. Like, those are the three options, and you kind of rank them. They're equal to me. I have no idea. I think if UCLA is going to win, and they're going to win comfortably, it'll be because they do get home to Chase Garbers and they make a mess in the backfield. If they do that, UCLA has a great chance of beating Cal somewhat comfortably, possibly. Again, though, that's not like it's like less than a coin flip's chance that actually happens, given what UCLA wants to do defensively. So, yeah, I think those are the two paths. If I had to pick, if I absolutely just needed to pick, Oh my God. I think Cal is good. I think Cal is fine. I think that I think they're I made a prediction preseason that Cal would finish second in the Pac-12 North. If Oregon State beats Oregon and Washington State wins, they will be tied for second in the North, which is hilarious to me. I'm gonna go ahead and say I know what I'll be rooting for. I'll be rooting for a Cal win. I'd love to see Chip Kelly get fired. and I think Cal is good enough to do it. I think they have the pieces that are needed to do it. They've looked really good. They have the momentum. I know that Justin Wilcox is kind of getting laughed at right now because he's being floated for the Washington job, but I think overall might be better than Chip Kelly as a coach and might be better at making some of the adjustments that are needed. Chip Kelly's a great offensive coach, but I don't know. I'm going to say Cal wins, though. I'll pick him to win by 3. I don't know. The score could be 45-42, or it could be like 27-24. This game, no clue. This is the most confusing game of all season for me as a UCLA fan.
I mean, people who are listening to this can't see the video, but like you could just see the internal strife that Carlos had where he was like trying to figure out, like he had like the angel and devil on both of his shoulders and he was like trying to figure out which one he wanted to listen to. And it's just decisions. You can see it. Oh, man. Well, I mean, there's one last question we ask all of the people that come on this preview pod every week. And I always have to put this disclaimer, like preface the question. We don't condone violence. Violence is not something we condone. All right. But if you were in a, if the butt is huge, if you were in a bubble and you did not have any repercussions, okay, whom would you most want to punch in the face?
Does this have to be Pac-12 football related? I mean, with a bunch of politicians.
No, we've gotten politicians. I think it was Oregon State. We had, or Colorado, where he came on and said, the guy who's been taking my parking spot. So, and we've had all the way up to politicians. So like it goes all across the board.
Oh God, there's so many people. Oh man, picking one is so hard. I'm gonna say my city council member. There are a few people who I hate. I won't disclose his name so as not to dox myself here. But my city council member is absolutely horrible. He's a Democrat. People out there should know. I'm like just very, very far left. I absolutely hate the precarity that people have to deal with. I absolutely hate the police state that we live in. I hate all of it. And there's just been a few moments during, you know, the past year or two where I've just begged my city council member to listen to the thousands of people who are talking to him, trying to tell him what they want, and for him and constantly him just ignoring it. So my city council member is probably, he's probably number one. And then number two is Mario Cristobal, because I think he's horrific and is an amazing recruiter. And he drives me nuts. He drives me absolutely nuts because I don't think he's a good coach, but he's proof that you don't need to be. You just get a bunch of blue chips and be good. And I just, makes me so mad. Makes me so mad that that's all that he's doing. He's Jim Mora to me.
Well, let's just hope the Miami job opens up and he goes home for everyone's sake.
Go home, Mario.
Go home to Florida, Mario. Go home. Well, Carlos, thanks for joining the pod and talking about UCLA. Where can the fine folks of Cal fandom find the No Truck Stops podcast and what you guys talk about?
Yeah, we talk about Pac-12 stuff. We talk about we've talked about every team at length, feels like almost every week, which we promised we wouldn't do, but we end up doing anyway, just because we pay attention to the league and love the league, this very dumb, silly league. People can follow us on Twitter at No Truck Stops Pod. We have an Instagram that's kind of inactive. I'm bad at it. My co-host told me not to do it, but I did it anyway. at No Truck Stops Pod also. Come yell at us about how we're talking about Cal. We obviously watch a lot of Cal games. One of my co-hosts, Avery Brave at Brave_Grapes on Twitter, I think she tweeted something like, "Oh, I've watched every Cal game this year." And Cal fans were like, "Why would you do that? I haven't even watched every Cal game this year."
This is a true statement. Yeah.
it's a little embarrassing that we're like, "Yeah, of course. Yeah, I've watched almost every Cal game. This is like one or two that I missed." But at No Truck Stops Pod, and you know, we love hearing from other people and hearing their thoughts around the league. It's been a weird year. It's been a dumb year. This is actually for Cal fans who don't know and aren't keeping up with the Pac-12. This is the worst year for the conference since 1961. If you paid attention to simple rating system, which just looks at average point differential versus opponent adjusted point differential. This is a horrific year, and you know, whoever comes out on top of it, congratulations. It might not be Oregon. It'd be cool to see someone else take it. So we'll obviously talk about that and what Rose Bowl implications mean for which teams and that sort of thing.
There you have it, folks. Another great podcast to listen to and get your Pac-12 fix. But that's it for here on the Golden Bearcast. I'm Rob Hong, and as always, go Bears. All right.